Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Here's a question to consider. Are our children and teenagers more anxious than previous generations? Are parents today too quick to see a normal negative feeling as an indication of a deeper problem? And given the rapid changes in social media, in screen time, the online algorithms, what is a normal level of anxiety now? Well, to answer some of those questions, we hope, I'm joined by our regular parenting expert, clinical child psychologist, Dr. David Coleman. David, you're very welcome.
Morning, Claire.
Thank you for being here. So that basic question, are children and teens becoming more anxious, or are they more anxious now than, say, we might have been?
So I'm not sure. Yes, I think there are certainly circumstances that lead children and teenagers to be a little bit more anxious than perhaps we were in our generation. But I think also there's just a lot more awareness about things like anxiety and depression and other terms like that, that I think mean that, you know, children and certainly maybe their families identify things like anxiety quicker and sooner. And
is that a good thing?
Well, I don't know. I think I differ from a lot of people. I'm not so sure it is a great thing. I think there's perhaps an over kind of pathologizing of things like anxiety. I mean, anxiety has always been part of the human condition. It's something important for us to be able to get anxious. We need to be anxious at times because it keeps us safe. And so we spot danger. We go, oh, okay, maybe that's not a great thing. Maybe I am too high on this wall. Maybe I shouldn't jump. So I'll, you know, find a different way down off the wall. And I think what's happened because of circumstances, perhaps, as I say, or because of just maybe the greater awareness, which in its own way is a good thing. But I think then, yeah, more people, you know, identify anxiety. And I certainly in my clinic now would find that if I get teenagers particularly coming in, they'll say things like, you know, well, I have anxiety, almost like, you know, I have COVID. So I have this condition, I have this illness, I have this disease that, again, from their perspective, then is something that's permanent and is always going to be part of their lives and they're never going to be able to deal with it. And so I think, you know, we do have to have a little bit more education, I think, for people to remind them that, look, anxiety has always been part of life and it's natural and it's normal and it's actually not a bad thing to have. What we do, though, need to be able to do is regulate that anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to find ways to support children and teenagers to recognize, yes, you feel anxious, but it's not an anxiety that's going to be critical. It's not an anxiety that's going to get in your way. And so therefore, it's still worth your while trying to do the thing that you're nervous about. And I think you'll probably find that you'll cope fine. And I think that's the missing piece for a lot of children and a lot of families. It's like their children become so anxious and then everybody goes, oh my God, you know, they're anxious, they can't do it. But of course, you know, when we avoid, all that does is strengthen the anxiety. Because if we avoid the situation, then we're back to going, well, the only reason I feel okay now is because I'm not doing the thing.
But the symptoms of anxiety will make life very difficult for some people who experience them. So this is about trying to find ways to deal with those symptoms, whether it is feeling breathless or feeling afraid and terrified.
Yes.
and sweaty. Yeah. And clammy and all of,
yeah,
those things.
Racing heart, yeah.
How do you cope with that?
So that's, again, another key bit of learning, I think. And once we have this idea that anxiety is normal, then the physical symptoms of it certainly are also normal. And they're, you know, they happen because of adrenaline. Adrenaline happens because the brain sends out a message saying, you know, we're in a dangerous situation. We need to react instantly. And so that's what the adrenaline response is all about. And so back when we were meeting real dangers in real life, like, you know, saber-toothed tigers on the,
yeah,
trail in front of us, it was useful to be able to be instantly ready to run away or to fight against that danger. You know, those kinds of responses are rarely needed now. We're off, you know, it's rare that we'd be in a life-threatening situation as a child or as a teenager or even as an adult. And so what we need to do is to find a way to just recognize that the physical symptoms that we're experiencing can also be regulated. And so that, you know, there's lots of apps out there that will help with that. Meditation, breathing exercises, physical relaxation exercises, sometimes distraction is enough. And so when we can get a handle on the physicality of the anxiety, then the brain can kind of click back into gear. Because before that, while the physical symptoms are quite strong, the brain turns into a little bit of mush. It's not very rational in its approach to it. And so we don't have what we really need, which is this background voice going, yes, okay, it seems like it's dangerous, and yet I think it's going to be okay. I think I'm going to be able to manage, and I think I just need to do this instead. And so, you know, we can talk ourselves down at the cliff. If you can think of, I think the most common example would be if you're sitting watching the telly and you don't realize that somebody has walked into the room behind you and they go, oh, what are you watching? You go, Jesus, oh my God, you know, and you clutch at your heart because you felt that jolt of adrenaline. And as soon as you see who it is, ideally they're a friend, neighbor, you know, or your husband, wife, whoever. And so you immediately go, oh my God, oh God, oh, you should have told me, oh, I can't believe you just walked, Oh, holy God. Oh, yeah. What am I watching? I don't know what. Holy God. What did you do creeping up on me? You know, but all that is you telling yourself, actually, I'm okay. This is my, you know, somebody that I trust and love. And so I'm okay. And so you're soothing those physical symptoms. And then your brain clicks back into gear and goes, okay, I'm actually okay. And I can continue on. I can have a conversation. I can watch television.
So it's teaching how to have that response.
Yes.
In a lot of different situations.
Loads of different situations.
So yeah. This is a big issue. You've said you've seen this in your own clinical practice. Mm. So you've decided you're going on a nationwide tour now to theatres around the country to talk to people about this.
I am. I started last year, actually. Shimsa Tira down in Tralee asked me to come and give a talk, and I did, and it was very well received. And I thought, oh, actually, maybe there's a need to do this a little bit more broadly. And so, yeah, so we've decided we're going to be pretty much everywhere around the country. So we're heading to, I think we start in Ennis, which is close to me. So an easy first night, and then we're up in Letterkenny. Well, I hope. Well, look, they're all going to be. I mean, I love talking to a live audience. It's something completely different. I mean, I give, you know, people will see my Instagram reels and stuff. You know, people know that I can, you know, I communicate about stuff. But, you know, what I do in the Instagram reels, I look back at something like, God, that's very serious, you know, and that's not actually the true me. I think I'm a little bit more. A little bit more humorous. And certainly people who've come to my talks would probably say, actually, that's kind of entertaining. Like, well, I learned a lot, but actually, he's kind of fun.
So you'll be in front of real people.
Real people, real audience. And so, yeah, I'll be talking for about an hour and a quarter. And then I'm going to throw the floor open for some questions and answers as well. So people who do like to, you know, put questions to me on Instagram or whatever, this is a real chance to get them answered in real time.
Okay.
As well.
And people can go to your website, which is davidcoleman.ie, isn't it?
Yes, davidcoleman.ie/tour. So okay. All the dates are there. And yeah.
Listen, as we've been chatting, of course the questions have been coming in,
so
let's get to them. And it's interesting, you know, there is a focus on anxiety and what I see coming in here. So my normally outgoing bubbly daughter has just started first class and has suddenly become anxious. She's complaining of tummy aches, missing us, we have tears at bedtime and on waking in the morning before going to school. She seems to be lacking her usual confidence and outgoing personality, not as enthusiastic going to her extracurricular activities either. It's heartbreaking to see her upset and this change of personality and confidence. How can I help her? And can I say as well, in addition to that, anecdotally, I hear a lot of this because I have children in around this age, and I hear it a lot from my contemporaries, you know, at school, that there's a bit of this around. Can you explain what's going on there?
Well, it could be any number of things. Firstly, I think the curriculum changes in first class. And so a child moves from senior and junior or junior and senior infants into first class. And so suddenly I think there's an uptick in the academic expectations. I think there's a slight change sometimes in the attitude of teachers. I think teachers in first class are often, they appear a lot more serious, a lot more, again, focused on the work, and the idea that they're in babies is kind of gone. And so I think that means that children possibly just have a different experience of their teacher in first class. And I think that's probably the big one, is just, you know, in most situations where a child changes and the change is unexpected, then you have to look at, well, what else is changing around that child? Because it's quite likely that something in their environment has triggered this anxiety response. And so it may be just that the particular teacher that this first class child has now is just very different to the teacher that they had in junior and senior infants. Maybe it's the kind of teacher who's a little bit more strict, a little bit more stern, whatever it might be. And that's enough to throw this particular child off their game. And so what will then happen is, you know, they feel anxious going into school. School is quite stressful. They're probably exhausted by the end of school. And so then they probably, as they've said, don't have the energy or the enthusiasm for the after school stuff, because it's like, oh my God, I'm only after just getting through school. Like, and it was too much, you know, and you made me go and I didn't want to go. And, and so then, you know, that's what kind of leads then into the, what would you call it, the contagion almost into other activities, which they probably do actually really enjoy. So I think, again, in all these kinds of situations with a younger child like that, a lot of it is about your ability to co-regulate. So this is a situation where, as a parent, you don't want to panic yourself. You don't want to say, oh my God, you know, they suddenly, you know, they're never going to get through school. How are, you know, this is them in first class. What are they going to be like by the time they get to sixth class? Oh, they'll never cope in secondary school. And so if you start to spiral, well, then your child is certainly going to continue to spiral themselves. And so what you need to do as a parent is just react in a really calm, warm, understanding way and go, I think it might be really different. Oh, I bet you things just feel different in first class. Now tell me a little bit about what's your teacher like? And so then you might explore about what the teacher's like, what's the class like, have they been put sitting beside the messer in the class, you know, and maybe this is a diligent student who now just can't cope because they're getting somebody who's flicking them with a pen or, you know, kind of whatever it might be. It's, you know, it's all these small things that throw children off their game. And so we want to be able to help them explore what that might be. So again, another good thing, maybe go and talk to the teacher in this situation just to see, is there something about the class dynamic now? Has the class been split? Is it, you know, have they moved up? Because again, sometimes if you've been in, you know, junior, senior infants and then first class, there's a new influx of kids. So maybe there's a just a change in the dynamic. All those things are relevant and they can be addressed. But ultimately, it's about just going, oh, yeah, you seem really upset. I think you're going to be OK, though. And then you keep them going.
But you have to try and figure out what is causing that, like what is at the root of that. And it can be very difficult at that age to know what's happening.
It can. And you know, I mean, we can deal with the symptoms of anxiety without understanding the cause of it. So you can still teach children ways to calm themselves down. Yes, if you can understand the cause of it, it'll really speed the process.
But you're saying it's not essential.
It's not critical. I mean, it definitely helps. Yeah. I mean, if you can puzzle it out with them or through the teachers or through, you know, whatever else it might be, you know, it definitely helps, because then I think if you can address the issue, the anxiety will fade away.
Now, we have a 15-year-old. Well, my son is turning 15 in October, says this listener. And he says education is a waste of time. He doesn't like going into school. And when we talk to him about education, we can see the anxiety and the anger rising in him. What can we do? What can you do is right. That's really tricky.
Yeah. So, you know, it is interesting. I think in the last number of years, I almost automatically subtract whatever year we are now, you know, subtract 2020 from it. So I think back 4 years ago. So he was 11. So he was in fifth class. So I wonder what his experience of finishing, you know, primary school was even like. Did he feel like he actually made the transition to first year, or was he kind of thrown into first year without feeling like he got to finish off being a child, and suddenly he's in this kind of teenage environment? And so that might be a starting point to consider what might be going on for this lad. Again, you know, it would be interesting to compare what was his experience like in primary school, because if it was pretty okay, if he was a pretty happy-go-lucky, you know, willing to go into school in primary school and now has become disaffected, some of that might be just the teenage years. I think there's an awful lot more teenagers that are a lot more disaffected with school, don't really see the point, don't really see the relevance, you know, because they're all lost in TikTok and they're thinking, oh, I could be an influencer and all I need is, you know, 40K followers and then I'll suddenly start getting all my, you know, paid promotions. And
that is around the place. Oh, that message is very much, I don't need to go to college. Look at your man on YouTube.
Well, I mean, I think it's funny because I do have stuff on Instagram and so various people have followed me. And so when I'm working with teenagers over the summer, you know, often the chat turns to social media. And so, you know, eventually they work out that I'm on social media and they go, oh, yeah. So, what, you know, and I go, well, no, about 130,000 followers. And they're like, well, oh, my God, you're actually famous. You're actually famous. Right. So, yeah. There is a lot of that about, though. And then
you say, but I did go to college. A couple of times.
No, I just point out about how actually awesome I am, you know. No, you're right. It is. It's a different world because there are new revenue streams for kids to consider.
And that's fine. But they need to know that that's not always going to work out. You know, you got to have a backup plan.
Yeah,
right?
But I think if as a parent, you just go with the, well, that's not realistic now. And, I, you know, you got to just kind of cop on and, you know, get with the program. Then you begin to end up in this kind of resistant phase with them, and they're going to maybe just not listen to you anymore. So I think you have to kind of go with where they're at. You have to really understand it. And then, you know, alongside understanding it, then you can suggest maybe some of the more traditional routes that might also be worth investing in. And that education as a longer term thing is always going to be a good investment because it will always stand to you.
But it's tricky. And we all can see that's hard to deal with.
Go into the school there, talk to the year head, just in case you wouldn't know. Maybe there's an underlying bullying thing or something going on again, because, you know, often, as I say, there is a particular thing that happens for kids that they suddenly switch off. And so if you can, again, identify what that was, that might be the point at which you can reconnect them.
Another one on anxiety. This is about a 9-year-old boy, and his parents have been in touch this morning. This boy is a happy, smiley, sporty boy. He's also, however, quite conscious of what people think about him and about fitting in. And we've noticed in the last few months that he seems to be withdrawing a bit and his confidence seems to be waning. In the last year, he started waking a lot during the night. He was never the best sleeper, but he now seems to be coming into us every night. Is he just going through an anxious phase, they ask?
Nine, did you say?
Nine.
Yeah. Possibly, or again, oftentimes, so if you have children whose kind of whole status is linked around sport or something, you know, it, again, if somebody then says to them, oh, you played really shit, excuse my language, you know, I think then you have a child who suddenly goes, oh, okay, maybe I'm not so good. But if all of their belief about themselves is based on everybody telling them, oh, you're great, you're this, you're that, and they did mention that he was sporty and so on. And so maybe that's where he got all of his kind of positive affirmation from. And so if suddenly he's getting negative from somebody, because again, new mentor, new coach on his sports teams, you know, maybe he's not getting the same attention he used to, maybe he's no longer the best on the team. All these things suddenly lead kids to become a little bit both self-conscious, but also I think, you know, in terms of their capacity, I suppose, to see themselves as okay begins to falter a little bit. And so that might be, again, what's going on there. So, yeah, just kind of go with him through it. The one thing I would always say to parents when talking about anxiety to their kids is, look, anxiety is like any other emotion. You know, we talk about, you know, you don't say, well, I have happiness, you know, because that would suggest that I just have it and it just embodies me and I live it. Whereas people do say that about anxiety. And so we want, you know, kids to realize anxiety, it's like every other feeling. It will come and then it will go.
It's not a diagnosis.
It will come and then it will go. It's certainly not a diagnosis.
And
well, ironically, it can be. You know, you can have anxiety disorders. So,
but that's on a different scale.
It's on a completely different scale to what we're talking
about. But that child is coming into their room every night. And I'm just, what I'm thinking of there is that the best thing might be for that child to know that he has a safe place at home, you know, and that he will be loved and cocooned. And if he comes in the night, he'll get a hug and it's fine.
Yeah, well, I'm a big believer in,
I know,
when in doubt, co-sleeping works, you know, unless they're too wriggly, in which case then maybe you need to think about a different form of co-sleeping, maybe on the mattress in the on the floor in the room. But absolutely, I think it's really helpful for kids to know that their parents, they get it and that they are that secure base. And it's brilliant when kids have that secure base at home, that they know they can come back and all will be well. Again, the danger is that they then just go, oh, well, I can't go anywhere else because, you know, it's so safe at home and everywhere else is, you know, dangerous. So, yes, absolutely. They do need to, you know, give him all of the cuddles. And, you know, he is only nine, you know, and to remind him, look, you know, this is tricky. It sounds like it's hard and oh, there's probably things you don't like. And yet, you know, we know that you love it so much and, you know, you really enjoy your soccer. And so, you know, I think we're going to keep you going. No reason to stop it, you know. But of course, you know, when you're tired after soccer, you can come home. And yes, we'd probably be able to have some hot chocolate. I think it'll be nice.
Yeah.
Then.
And you're great at other things, too.
Oh, there you are. Claire, Jesus, you could take over.
No, I don't think so. I'm learning.
I suddenly realised that we'd have to do a job swap and then I don't want to do that either.
I'm a work in progress like the rest of us. Now, I have a few general ones coming in as well. So this is an 11-year-old daughter who hoards sweets for bedtime and eats them while reading. We often find the wrappers under her bed. Who amongst us has not found wrappers under the bed? We don't particularly restrict treats in general, so I don't know how to handle it and it's been going on for years.
Yeah, I can remember reading the J.R.R. Tolkien books with a can of Club Orange and a Mars bar for five nights in a row until I realised I'm actually going to get sick now from all the sweet stuff. But that was like just, it was just getting bet into a book, you know, at nighttime. So that could be what's happening here. I think, again, you know, if as a family you're kind of moderate and you're careful, then there's probably going to be a limit to the number of sweets that she can even hoard, you know, depending on you know, your sense of where she's getting the sweets.
Yeah.
So it mightn't be the worst thing. Reading at nighttime is fantastic. You don't want to, you know, you definitely don't want to disrupt her reading at nighttime. But I think just talk to her about the choices that she's making. And because again, you know, she's 11. And so you can appeal to her better nature. You can say, look, I don't think it's a great thing. You know, look, you know, if you like having a bit of a sweet thing, you know, while you're reading, well, let's plan for that. And we'll give you something. And it can be something small then. And then, you know, as the reading is finished, you can brush your teeth and, you know, mind her dental health as well. And
yeah. Keep an eye on it. And you're saying restrict what's in the house maybe as well.
Yeah, well, they probably do anyway, because it sounds like they're surprised that she's got this hoard of sweets. And so, but there is probably a limit to what she can actually hoard. You know, it doesn't sound like it's like that she's eating tons and tons and tons of sweet things at nighttime. But that would be the way to do it, just to check in with her and say, look, we'd rather give you something sweet than have you sneaking the sweet stuff. And so let's see if we can plan around that.
Now, back to anxiety. I have another one here. This is about a 22-year-old daughter who's in fourth year in college and has suddenly developed a situation where she feels incredible nausea whenever she has a social situation or event coming up. The nausea is very real. She's actually been ill. She's now getting anxious about the thought of this happening, which reinforces the cycle. I don't know how to help her resolve this. It's becoming debilitating for her.
Yeah. So again, interesting to find out, you know, what was it that was different? Maybe she had a really difficult social experience that led her to feel that kind of nausea on a particular occasion. The nausea is most likely, again, when we think of adrenaline, and one of the impacts of adrenaline is that it kind of tries to maximize the level of blood in the arms and the legs, ready to run away or to fight against the danger. And so in order to do that, because we can't just suddenly generate extra blood, it has to take the blood from somewhere, and it takes it from our digestive system. So that's why we often get the butterflies in our tummy, or the urgency that we think we need to go to the toilet, or we get nausea. It's because our digestive system is slowing down and or stopping. So there's a really good physical explanation for why, as soon as she starts to feel anxious about something, she feels nauseous. But the mum, if it was the mum or the dad contacting us, is absolutely right. What that's now setting up for her is that the anticipation of feeling nauseous is also then part of her anxiety, which of course is going to make her feel more nauseous. And so, you know, that's going to be a problem. So what she really needs to do is to get a handle on the physicality of the anxiety. And so she needs to learn, I would suggest maybe a breathing technique is often the most effective in acute situations. It slows our heart rate down. When our heart rate slows down, it sends a message back to the adrenaline system to say, look, the danger is past. I don't need to pump so hard. You know, we're sorted. The adrenaline fades away. And then, you know, we start to feel
it's
a little bit more normal.
A big challenge, though. I don't know if you saw Jack Draper, the British tennis player, in the semi-final of the US Open.
No.
Got sick on the court three times. And
okay.
It happens in all of his big competitions. And he has conceded that this is something that is anxiety,
pure anxiety
related.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, it's a really difficult thing to try and manage.
Yeah. But I think if you know that it's anxiety, then you know that it's not a tummy bug. Because if he thought it was a tummy bug, he'd be like, well, I can't play.
Mm.
So he knows he just needs to get through this. This is going to be part of his anxiety. Once he kind of pukes, then he probably feels better. And, well, obviously not if he's puked three times. So I think that that is, but it is part of the thing is recognizing that this is anxiety based. If you can get a handle on the anxiety, the nausea will fade away. The nausea will stop because it's not a physically generated nausea.
Well, listen, David, thank you so much for coming in. And
pleasure.
People can learn more about dealing with anxiety, the symptoms of anxiety. If you go to David's website, davidcoleman.ie/tour, David's going to be all over the place in the next little while. So you can go and see him live and in action. We'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.